Hello, everyone. Coming up on the Van Maren Show, we're going to be talking to Allie Beth Stuckey about her new book, What Parents Are Facing in the Social Media Age, and what the solution to the toxic culture of self-love actually is. Stay with us. Hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Van Maren, and welcome back to the Van Maren Show at LifeSiteNews.com. Joining me today is Allie Beth Stuckey, the author of a recent book called You're Not Enough and That's Okay, Escaping the Toxic Culture of Self-Love. She talks about all sorts of different cultural issues over at her podcast, Relatable. She's been a longtime social commentator. As a millennial, I first got to know her as the conservative millennial. I love what she has to say, especially about abortion and how modern Christianity needs to resist the trends of culture. You can check her out over on Twitter as well. She often has very insightful things that she shares there. We're very pleased to have her on the podcast. So without further introduction from me, here's my conversation with Allie Beth Stuckey. So just to start off, maybe you could share with our listeners and our viewers a bit about what made you decide to write this book.
Yes. So You're Not Enough and That's Okay, Escaping the Toxic Culture of Self-Love. Most people know kind of what I'm talking about when they hear the culture of self-love, especially if you are a young woman who has logged on to Instagram at any point in the past 5 years, but some women might not know why it's toxic, because they tell women these things, and really just young people in general, platitudes that sound really good, that you're enough, you're perfect the way you are. You determine your own truth. You can't love other people until you love yourself. And it all sounds really good. These are all self-esteem boosters. But the reason why I wrote this book talking about the toxicity of this mindset is because when I started my podcast, Relatable, a couple years ago, we talked about news culture, podcast, politics, theology. Mm-hmm. From a Christian conservative perspective, I started getting a lot of requests to talk about this idea of self-love. And as I was researching, I started getting personal stories from listeners saying, I've been so caught up in this world of self-motivation and self-empowerment that really targets young women, and I'm actually more miserable than I was before. I really struggle with self-loathing. I struggle with insecurity, and this stuff helped me for a little bit, but I'm actually worse off than I was before I started following some of these self-love gurus. And so I started to look at the lies that women were believing and that were being fed to us via social media. And I uncovered really the myth behind it. And that's the idea that you are enough. You're enough for your own happiness and satisfaction and purpose. The reality is that we're not. We're very incomplete people in need of our faith, in need of something bigger than us, in need of family, in need of community, in need of work, in need of purpose. And we are not enough in and of ourselves to give ourselves or other people the things that we need. And in this hyper-individualized society, we've removed ourselves from those values and institutions mm-hmm. that help human beings thrive. And so that's why I wrote this book.
Now, one of the things that I find a lot of parents don't understand is that most young people are now growing up in a culture where for the first time they're influenced primarily by peers rather than by adults. And so for myself, I graduated high school in 2006. The first iPhone came out in 2007. So I kind of tasted it. I was on the verge of what that culture looks like, but I didn't grow up immersed in it like, say, my younger siblings did. So maybe you just paint us a picture. What is it like to grow up as a young female in today's culture?
Yes. So I'm close in age to you. I graduated from high school in 2010. So I too feel like I didn't get immersed in the social media culture that we have today back then. And honestly, I'm very thankful for it. So I feel pretty familiar with kind of the social media trends and platforms that are popular among young people, with TikTok and Snapchat and all that stuff that we really thankfully didn't have when we were in high school and even parts of college, that really prize superficiality and two-dimensional appearances above real-life relationships, real-life community, and gleaning real-life wisdom from things like books and adults, like you said, And so I truly believe that young people, people of all ages who spend all of their time on social media, their brains actually atrophy. They become so used to instant gratification, so used to the affirmation that comes from a click or a like or a retweet or a share, so used to their identity being in this two-dimensional profile that they have put of themselves online, that they actually, without even meaning to, become very me-centric, both in their thinking and in their life. And they so easily buy into these lies that are told to us that the most important thing in your life is that you love yourself and feel good about yourself. Young people, including us, we have been fed this message that everybody gets a trophy mentality. You are special. You are perfect the way you are. For a long time, young people hear that even more. But the ironic thing is, I don't actually think it's ironic. I think that it actually is directly correlated. But young people who have been fed this message for so long are more miserable than any other generation. They've got higher rates of anxiety and depression and suicide and loneliness and purposelessness. So if it's true that the solution to all of our problems is self-love, and the youngest generations have been fed this message of self-love longer than any other generation has, then it's obviously not working. It's obviously not working because the younger generations are very miserable. It's actually, I think, because we've become so self-centered and narcissistic that we are so miserable.
Well, it's interesting the way you've framed it. Because there's a book you're probably aware of that came out a couple of years ago by Nancy Jo Sals, who's a journalist for Vanity Fair, and she wrote a book called The Secret Life of the American Teenager. And I did an interview with her back when the book came out, and she opens the book by interviewing a whole bunch of young teenage girls, and the first sentence out of their mouths is, social media is essential to our lives, and we hate it. That basically they feel trapped sort of in this cycle where, on one hand, they know that the clicks aren't making them happy. They know the self-love thing isn't making them happy. They know that the culture is, in fact, toxic. But at the same time, it's where everything's taking place. Like, I do a lot of presentations at high schools on social media, on pornography, sexting, those sorts of topics. And the number one question I get from young men, but especially from young women, is, how do we actually have a social life when social life has moved online? And this is just where people hang out. If I don't have a phone, I'm not on the Facebook groups. I'm not on TikTok. I'm not on Instagram. I'm not on the WhatsApp group chats. So it seems like they kind of have a choice of being a social outcast or being on social media, and neither of those things make them happy. So how do you respond to people who feel trapped by the cultural scenario that they were born into?
I don't know if necessarily young people have to get off of social media altogether, but it probably means that you're not on every platform that exists. It probably means that you limit the number of hours that you are on social media, and that you have to try very hard, much harder than you and I did, to cultivate real life relationships, whether that means in the age of COVID-19, calling someone on the phone, something I know young people don't do as much. I don't even like doing it because texting is so much easier. Meeting up with someone, hanging out with your family, reading a book, something I think a lot of young people just don't do for leisure in the way that I did when I was in high school. Since we didn't have Instagram or Snapchat to scroll through at night, I would spend pretty much every weeknight reading, just whether it was fiction or whether it was something substantial. I don't think that's something that happens anymore. And I think it takes more discipline and more intentionality from young people who are being pulled in 1,000 different directions, a million different movements, are vying for their mind, vying for their attention, vying for their passion and their emotions and their eyes, their money, all of that. It takes a lot of intentionality and a lot of deliberate discipline for them to turn off the phone at least sometimes for a certain amount of time each day to invest in real life relationships, to read your Bibles, to read books that actually matter, to cultivate your creative thinking in ways that actually add to your mind rather than just taking away from it in the way that scrolling through Instagram does. So I just think it takes discipline. I think it takes intentionality. And maybe that does mean that you miss out on some things that are happening online. I personally, and it's hard to convince, I think, a young person of this, because you feel like social acceptance is the only thing that matters, and you think that what people think of you in high school is going to matter forever, and it just doesn't. But it is worth missing out on some things for the long-term mental health benefits that unplugging from social media and technology have.
So now here's a question I've been wanting to ask you since I started going through your thesis on this and hearing you do other interviews about this, because I know you have a little girl, correct?
Yes.
And I have a 3-year-old little girl. And so a lot of people ask me, well, what should we do as parents? I'm like, well, I've raised 0 teenagers. I only have a 3-year-old. But in my ideal world, I look at what social media does and I want to just keep her away from it as long as possible so that she can actually have a childhood. I'm really fixated just on the idea that if she doesn't have these things around her, she can develop habits like reading for hours, like, you know, playing outside with the cat, you know, stuff like that used to be a normal part of childhood before the screens came along. But over and over and over again, parents tell me, well, it's almost impossible to limit the kids when it comes to screen time, to keep it away from our teenagers. So what advice would you have for parents who are reading what you're writing and are saying, we recognize that when our children are tapped onto social media, we lack the control to ensure that they're not being sucked into this toxic culture. And so what is the solution as parents who want to not, you know, chain their kids down to not totally suffocate them, but at the same time, just want to give them a childhood and give them the space to actually breathe and experience the things that used to be normal?
You and I are in the same boat. So I have not raised a teenager. And for all of the parents who are listening who are raising teenagers, I just want you to know, like, you have more wisdom to give me about parenting than I have to give you. And I recognize that. So I'm speaking not from someone with a ton of experience raising teenagers or even a parenting expert at all. I am coming to you as someone who engages with the culture, who analyzes and studies the culture very closely, and who as a career is trying to look at all of this from, I'm a Christian, so a biblical perspective. And I was also obviously once a teenager, and I remember very well thinking that my parents have no idea what they're talking about, that there's nothing that they can really tell me to do that I know best for me, even though when you're a teenager, your frontal lobe isn't even fully developed. That's actually part of why teenagers think that they know everything when they don't. What I would just encourage parents to remember is that as long as your teenager is under your roof, you still are the greatest influence in their life. Even if they hate you right now, even if they roll their eyes at everything that you say, even if they're constantly acting like you are smarter than them, I still remember the things that my parents taught me and the advice that they gave me and the things that they said that I didn't like then, but I wish that I believed. My parents were pretty strict growing up, and they were strict about the things that I watched and the places that I went, the people that I hung out with, and I hated it at the time. My dad actually asked me the other day, what would you go back and do differently if, you know, what would you change that we did, or what are you going to do differently? And he thought that I was going to say, you know, I'm going to be less strict. I'm not going to worry about the stuff. I had a list of all the things that I wish my parents had been more strict on when I was in high school, that I will be more strict on. Things about dating, no social media, a curfew for your phone, no TV in the room, me being able to monitor the apps and monitor text messages for a certain amount of time and within reason, of course. And enacting proper and responsible and loving authority over my children as long as they are living in my home to ensure that, like you said, they do have a childhood and you are protecting their innocence as much as and as long as you possibly can. It doesn't matter if your son or daughter is 17, they're going to college next year, and you haven't reined in any of their social media activity. You still have the opportunity right now to do that. And if you feel like you just don't know what to do, you just don't know where to start, maybe start with a conversation with them. Don't be afraid to discipline your kids if they are in your home, no matter how old they are, because they need that. And someone like me, who is a, you know, wannabe rebellious teenager, I'm looking back and thinking about all the ways that I wish my parents were stricter when I was in high school. And I guarantee you that in 10 years from now, your teenagers will be thinking the same thing. You are not overbearing by caring about the things that your kids consume. The things that they see and hear stick in their mind forever. It shapes who they become and what they think. And right now you have the opportunity, the responsibility to help protect their mind as much as you possibly can.
It's really interesting you put it that way, because when I got married a couple of years ago, I said in my thank you to my parents that everything stupid I did was when I didn't follow your advice and your example. And everything I did right was when I actually followed it. I grew up in a conservative reformed home as well. And I look at what we're facing as parents, and it's just, it's a lot different, right? Especially porn culture. I have a little boy, and porn culture absolutely terrifies me because I saw it suck the tail end of my generation down before they even knew it was really coming in their direction. And there was one other thing I really wanted to ask you, because one of the things that I admire about your podcast and the way that you approach a lot of issues is you always bring it back to, what does the Bible say? And that's not particularly popular even in a lot of Christian circles these days, where our cult, like Christianity is being kind of dragged along behind the culture, and we're sort of backfilling and saying, well, if we go here in the Bible, then we can support all of this woke stuff over here. But we're sort of running to catch up rather than rooting ourselves to Scripture and then moving forward. And the Scriptures don't say a lot of positive things about young people in terms of their level of wisdom and their ability to make decisions. And I remember hearing that at church when I was a teenager, and not particularly caring for the devastating analysis of the teenage male brain. But looking back, when people are getting these cell phones and they're getting access to sort of the sum total of depravity as it exists online, pornographic, social media, all of that, what can the Bible tell us about giving young people with, as you said earlier, not even a fully developed frontal lobe, the capacity to destroy themselves before they know what it means to destroy themselves?
Well, part of the immaturity that young people have is that they are also unable to even understand the consequences that you tell them. So it is possible that you sit down with your child and you say, look, this kind of behavior, this kind of thinking, this kind of entertainment consumed leads to this kind of mentality or these kind of life choices or this kind of influence, and it's destructive. I think it's so important to have those conversations, and it probably takes a lot of repetition in order to allow that advice to sink in. But understand that part of kids' immaturity is their inability to kind of grasp the things that you are saying. It's an invincibility that comes with a not fully developed brain. But the Bible is very clear that despite that, and because of that immaturity, you read the book of Proverbs. It's replete with advice about pursuing wisdom. The Bible describes wisdom as both a promise and a process. And so the book of James says that if you ask for wisdom, God will give it to you without reproach. It's something that he wants to give people. But in Proverbs, it also makes it very clear that wisdom is a process. It is something you seek after. Wisdom presents herself in Proverbs 1 as someone who is calling out in the streets, calling out in the market, saying, please chase after me. If you come after wisdom, you will have more riches than gold could ever give you. Your life will be so much better. But if you keep loving foolishness and keep loving simplicity, if you keep going along with bad people, if you keep letting bad company corrupt good morals, if you go the way of the evildoer, if you go the way of the scoffer, if you go the way of the person who hates wisdom, then your life will lead to destruction. We saw that, of course, in the Luke 15, the parable of the prodigal son, who certainly decided that he was going to abandon wisdom and pursue the things that he wanted to pursue. And so parents have the responsibility of teaching their kids wisdom, of praying for wisdom for their kids, but also teaching them the process by which you gain wisdom through reading God's word, and also just through reading history, through gaining knowledge in that way. We have the gift of common grace of being able to have so many resources around us to understand history and to learn from history. And so parents have to set that example themselves. They have to walk their kids through the process of gaining wisdom. And of course, we know the Bible is also clear in Proverbs that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So without sharing the gospel to your kids, without making sure that your kids know the basics of their theology, who made them, who made the world, why does God have the authority, the sole authority to say what is and what isn't, what's right and what's wrong, what's good and what's bad, to define things like justice and love and marriage and sexuality. Without explaining those things to your kids, then there's no chance of them having wisdom. They have to know where the source of wisdom is, where it comes from. They have to know the God who made them. And you do not have to be a theological expert to walk your kids through those questions. There are lots of good resources out there for you. So I just don't want parents to be discouraged. The time is now. The time is now for parents, for you to take your theology seriously, for you to take your worldview seriously, to teach that to your kids, no matter how old they are. Cultural Christianity has come and gone. The mainstream influence of Christianity on mainstream culture, it's come and gone. Christianity is going to be pushed out to the margins, and the church will be refined by fire, not destroyed by it. But that means that you need to make sure, parents, that you are firm in your faith and that your kids are too. And that starts with a fear of the Lord and cultivating wisdom through the Word of God. And God will absolutely equip you to do that. He promises that.
Final question, where can our listeners and our viewers find both your book as well as your podcast?
Yes, you can go to alliebethstuckey.com/book. That's alliebethstuckey.com/book. And you can find all the places where you can purchase it online. Should be available at your local bookstore and local Barnes & Noble as well. And if you are a woman, you can join Women's Book Club with Ali Stuckey on Facebook. We are actually going through the book together. Make sure that you answer all the admission questions so I can let you in. There's a little over 5,000 women who are going through the book together right now. And it's just been awesome to have discussions with like-minded women about these topics. And so you can go there. And then Relatable, we talk about news, culture, politics, theology from a Christian perspective. You can get that anywhere you get your podcasts, including on YouTube. I just interviewed Dr. John MacArthur on Monday, so that was my latest episode, if anyone is a fan of him who listens to this. I think that's all the places where you can find me.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to share with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was my conversation with Ali Beth Stuckey. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can hit like, hit subscribe. You can go to lifesitenews.com and click on the podcast tab where you can get this podcast wherever you find your podcast. You can get other pro-life and pro-family news to inform you about what's going on in the culture at lifesitenews.com. Once again, thank you so much for joining us this week, and we hope you'll join us again next week.